All right, so let's set the table here for the interview with Max. He's in Australia. The fires there were just starting up, and we talked offline a little bit about these fires, and they're pretty serious. I have a good friend who is down there. He's the equivalent of a ranger in Australia, and he was called in just last night on an emergency run for 3 days to deal with evacuations. And so it is summertime in Australia. It is the heat of summer, and there are fires everywhere in the middle of the country. And there are fires that have been threatening some of the nuclear installations in Australia as well. It is literally hell in Australia. So if you're listening in Australia, and there are people that do listen in Australia, I hope you're safe, and I hope that you're taking precaution wherever you are in Australia. Fortunately, I believe Max is in Byron Bay, so he's okay. He's near the water. It's not going to impact his life. But the fires had just begun when we started to talk. And really what brought my attention to having Max on the show was to talk about Sandy Hook and to talk about Well Aware One and to talk about Dallas Goldbug, who decided to take Max on. And Max believes that Well Aware One is a complete disinformation site and that it had been set up well in advance so that when Sandy Hook happened and that there would be some loose threads and that the potential for people to discover that there were actors involved in Sandy Hook, that they would go ultimately to Ed Chiarini's site. And that they would see not just the Sandy Hook material, but some of the other material as well. So this is Max challenging Ed Chiarini. Now, I myself, this is my take on Ed. I think Ed has done some incredible work. Early on, I think the Gifford stuff and the Columbine stuff are their must reads. Because it wraps your head around the fact that these events are stage managed, okay? So I don't want to discount the work that he did early on, but it's gotten a little crazy, and some of the matches that he's come up with are not matches. In my estimation, they're not matches. Like when he says Tony Hawk is Robbie Parker, I have a hard time with that. Tony Hawk is 6'5". Tony Hawk is a large guy. He's big. He's got big shoulders. And when I see Robbie Parker in that video, everybody in that video is the same size as he is. And he's not built like Tony Hawk. So he might have an ear that may look like Tony Hawk, but he's not Tony Hawk. That's me talking. So now we're in a place where it's discredited and it becomes disinformation. And there's a professor from Florida Atlantic who is saying the same thing. And I think he's been on Alex Jones's show, if I'm not mistaken. And as a result of him saying that there are actors involved, it's hit the mainstream. And now people are going to be looking for sources that confirm this. As a result, they're going to go to Well Aware One, or they're going to go to, Goldbug's pages or Ed's pages on Facebook, and they're going to see some of this stuff. And what happened was that Ed decided that Max was the husband of Sarah Silverman, and that he's part of the family and he's part of the ongoing charade. And then Max said, hey, look, I'm going to be in Dallas in July. Why don't you and I just meet face-to-face and we'll figure this out. We'll sort it out. And what ensued was a very aggressive and confrontational exchange, mostly from Dallas or Ed. So that's where it all started. And this is what we talked about, but we go into some other areas. And I think you'll enjoy the interview. It's 52 minutes long. This is myself and Max Egan. This is from Monday night, Tuesday, his time. And this is what we shared over the following 52 minutes. And I'll be back after the interview and I'll wrap up the show and we'll talk about the following week. We'll talk about next week. Here we go. Well, my next guest is here by popular demand. A number of listeners and people that are interested in the show, when I queried them, said that he would be a great person to interview. And since I knew about him, I completely concur. We're actually Facebook friends, and yet we hadn't really exchanged very much on Facebook until lately. And the man's name, of course, is the amazing Max Egan. How's it going, Max?
Very good, Rob. Pleasure to be here, brother.
So one of the reasons why I wanted to get in touch with you is that I wanted to, in 2013, bring as many people to the table who I feel really have a committed and creative purpose and access to unfolding not just what we would perceive as truth, but also coming up with some solutions for where we want to take this experience on planet Earth. And you really were at the top of the list for me. And it's funny because what really triggered this was I was sent a portion of one of your videos, and it had to do with this whole Sandy Hook experience and the actors. And I thought that what you had to say about that was quite interesting. You and I were quite close on that. And since that experience, since you and I talked about that, things really went into full-blown nuclear warfare with Ed Chiarini. What's going on with that now?
Oh, with Dallas Goldberg?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, when I first saw Dallas Goldberg stuff, like, I don't know, a year or so ago, it was a lot of it really caught my attention. I thought, well, this is very interesting research. You know, some of it looked like there was actually a possibility that what he was saying was true. And then he started releasing stuff which was like, obviously false. I mean, obviously wrong.
Right.
I mean, like, ridiculously, you know, some of the comparisons and the ear biometrics, and I just started thinking, why is he doing this? He had something there that was good. Why is he doing this? And I contacted him and said, Ed, you need to think about what you're doing. You're muddying the waters of this good stuff you've put out there, and you're creating a murky vision of this. What are you doing? And he got really defensive about it, and then suddenly he named me as one of these family members, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, okay, well, what's going on here? Is he just delusional or what? And then he started just kept putting out stuff which was so obviously blatantly wrong. And I began to think, well, what is the purpose of this? Why are the waters being muddied like this? I mean, sure, there are certain news stories that are faked. Now, I know this because I've worked in media. I know how easy it is to fake things. You know, they make stuff up. The media never really gives you the truth on anything. Even if the story's real, they never give you the truth on it. They give you their spin on it. So I know how fake the media is, but I just started to wonder why he would be doing all this. And then when Sandy Hook happened, there's so many questions with Sandy Hook. I mean, have you seen the recent video with Gene Rosen, the friendly man who took the children in?
There's a video
out there of him actually rehearsing his lines and all sorts of stuff. There's so many things about the Sandy Hook case that don't make sense. And I reckon there was a lot of actors involved in it. I mean, what's the guy's name? The husband.
Robbie Parker,
that's right. That video, I mean, this is obviously an actor. There's so many things about this that don't make sense. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, aha, there's the reason this whole well-aware one psyop has been put in place. So that now if you start calling actors on this, people are going to look for actors and they're going to go find this site, which is going to tell them everybody's actors, and it's going to show them stuff which is completely ridiculous, and they're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
That's the way counterintelligence works. They set up to muddy the waters. They give you snippets of truth, and then they muddy it to the point where it becomes unbelievable. So I mentioned that on the radio show, and then I got a full-blown attack from Ed Chiarini. How I'm a family member and I'm some member of the Green Party. Apparently I'm some guy from America, who I think he's a country and western singer, who pretends that he's a member of the Green Party in Australia. I must do the 16-hour flight out here a couple of times a week, you know,
right.
and back again. And on the side, apparently he pretends to be me. And when I'm seen in public, I'm wearing a prosthetic face. I mean, this is how ridiculous it's got.
Yeah, you're also Sarah Silverman's husband.
Yeah, I don't know even who that is, but fair enough, not a problem.
Say hello to
my wife for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it got ridiculous. And it worked perfectly because he kind of debunked me before there were any pictures of me anyway. He did a voice analysis, and he got someone with an Australian accent who sounds nothing like me. They sound like they've got a New South Wales accent. I've got a South Australian accent. So he did this whole voice comparison thing, and he said, yep, this is me. And then when video of me appeared, he said, oh, look, they're getting so desperate at my research that they've overdubbed Max Egan's voice onto this old guy to try to throw you off, you know. And then when more video surfaced of me, he started saying I'm wearing a prosthetic face. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, my son says that something he'd really like to do is go to Texas for this gaming convention. I thought, that's interesting. I had no reason to go to Texas. And suddenly I'm being dumped in Texas in July. And I thought, well, okay, Ed, here I am. I'm in Dallas. Let's meet up and you can show the world that I have a prosthetic face. And if you can't, then I can show the world that you're a psyop and you're feeding disinformation to the world. It's as simple as that. And the beauty of it is, I mean, he doesn't even have to show it to the meeting. It's just because I'm in Texas, while I'm there, I can say, okay, well, here I am, let's meet. If he doesn't show up, well, there you go. It shows that he can't walk his talk. He's not willing to have something as like a gift. This is a gift. If I'm this person, I'm wearing a prosthetic face, well, I'm being gifted to him on a silver platter by showing up in his town.
Right.
And now he can show it to the world. So it'll just bring the whole PSYOP down. But I really believe it's a PSYOP. The Well-Aware One side is a PSYOP. And I think it's all been leading up to this attack on the Second Amendment. And if you look at some of the things he's saying, he says, yes, government is good. We need government, all this sort of stuff. I mean, he used to work for Halliburton. There's so many things about it. And, you know, it's going to, and regardless of the followers he's got and the haters and the detractors he's got on the internet, that's irrelevant. What's going on with the truth movement is irrelevant in regards to Dallas Goldberg. But the thing is that the Well-Aware One side is now there because now the media, you notice, it's perfect, man. The media has also mentioned a couple of times, oh, there are sites saying that this is a conspiracy and they're all actors.
Right.
Have you heard that from the mainstream media?
Yeah, it's starting to pop up.
The mainstream media would never say that. So they're saying that so that now your average Joe, your average blockhead that lives in the suburbs and drinks fluoride and has no idea that the banking system's even corrupt, may look online and see, oh, let's have a look. They're saying it's all actors, and what they're going to find is Well-Aware One.
Yeah.
And Well-Aware One is going to show them stuff which is patently false and absolutely provably false, absolutely to the point of being ridiculous. And in amongst it is this whole thing about the Sandy Hook shootings and any pictures of the actual actors that were used that are being put up. Ed Sheeran is now debunking them and saying, no, they're putting those things there to fool you. It's not these actors. It's these people from this family that he keeps saying everybody's from. He says, I'm from and everybody's from.
Right.
It's all one family running the whole world. You know, like, so this whole psyop has been put in place, I believe, specifically to muddy the waters around what's just happened at Sandy Hook. And that's what Ed Sheeran's purpose is. That's what Well-Aware One has been for. That's it. I mean, it makes perfect sense that that's what it's for. That's what I've seen anyway. And that's just my opinion, folks, but that's what I think.
Well, it's really interesting because I remember running across his stuff with the Gifford shooting, and I actually thought it was quite good. And he got into that whole sort of nest of actors in Tucson, and I thought, wow, I mean, probably like you. There's something with some merit. And then I saw some of the stuff he did with Columbine, which I also thought was pretty interesting. But what I found, Max, was that there was a gap with him. And there was a gap in time between when he did that Gifford stuff and then when he started to really crank this material out. There's some downtime in between those two things. And I'm wondering what happened during that downtime. And I also wonder, how does he do this as a one-man operation? Because the amount of and the volume of content he's putting out, even if it is inaccurate, feels to me like there's more than one person involved.
Well, there could easily be. I mean, there could easily be. Who knows? But it's definitely a PSYOP, and that's what it's been for. And like I said, it's irrelevant of what we think about it, what the people in the alternate media who already know what's going on, even people who are looking down those rabbit holes, whether you're on his side or you're not on his side, it's irrelevant. The relevant thing is the information is now there for the people who are completely asleep, so that now when the media calls out, oh, look, there's people saying it was actors, when they look for it, what they're going to find is well aware one.
Right.
Okay, because it's gone viral so much with people looking at it and arguing about it. See, that's why.
Yeah.
You know, you argue about it, and you start talking about it, and it puts the information out there, more people start hearing about it. So when they search for this, this is what they're going to find. And so they're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and they're not going to look any deeper.
Right.
And they'll be able to stage so many more things now, because now they've undermined the concept of doing it. Like, they'll just be able to wag the dog with all the news now, as much as they probably are with a lot of it anyway. They'll be able to do it with virtually all of it now, because people will immediately associate people saying that with what Ed Sheeran's got on.
One of those tin hat foil actor people, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it's been for, of course. Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, if I was going to do something like this, that's what I'd do. I'd set up this sort of a mechanism first. It makes perfect sense that the powers that be would do that.
Right.
And that's what it is. I mean, and so as soon as the Sandy Hook shooting happened, it became so obvious that there's actors involved here. I mean, I wonder if any children even died, you know, because there's even there's a woman on Facebook saying, my daughter's picture's been stolen off Facebook and used as one of the kids at the school.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, so it's doubtful that any children died. It's doubtful the event even happened. They probably took Adam Lanza into the school and shot him, you know?
Right. I mean, there's so many holes in this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost obscene. You know, first you have the coroner or the medical examiner, whoever that guy is, and he's basically saying that the kids were all shot with a semi-automatic rifle, and yet Lanza didn't have anything on him like that. He had the pistols, and the Bushmaster was in the trunk of the car, and they asked him about it in this press conference. And he said, I can't go there. I can't incriminate myself. We'd have to talk about this in a court of law. I mean, he went to that. He pulled that refrain every single time somebody asked him a semi-serious follow-up question. So you've got that. Today I was online, and there was a guy who's been cruising around, and he actually found he was looking for something that was pre-1214 with Sandy Hook. And he went like 34, 35 pages deep into the Google search results. And he found something from the United Way, which was kind of a memorial or a very quick sort of, you know, plea for peace and compassion for the children of Newtown. And he saw the timestamp on that thing from Google, and it was December 11th. It was 3 days before it actually happened. And it's like, well, what's up with that? I mean, there's so many. This thing is filled with Swiss cheese.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It's completely. There's so many holes in it. I mean, who knows what actually happened? But I think, you know, like I said, the interesting thing about it, and what really confirmed it for me, was when the media started saying, "Oh, there's conspiracy sites saying that it was a hoax and they were actors."
Right.
As soon as I heard that on the news, I went, "Bang! There it is. That's the confirmation I needed to what well aware one has been put there for."
Yeah.
You know? And this is what I said on the show before I'd even heard that announcement. So, yeah, so I guess so that's why all the attacks have happened. But I think the remarkable thing is that the universe has just kind of now dropped me in Dallas. Oh, okay, here you go. You've just been attacked by this guy. You mentioned him on the air, and he fully attacked me. All these people, all his minions, you know, which are probably all him, or rather CIA agents or something. And suddenly they just dropped me in Dallas.
Right.
Oh, okay, well, now I'm in Dallas. So I come out of the woodwork. Here I am. You can prove it. And if you can't, then we can do it. I can video the whole thing and put it out there. Well aware one, exposed, blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there's much point in focusing too much attention on him. But it's just interesting that the universe has just dropped me there, because I think it's actually quite an important sign-off that they've put in place.
Yeah.
I think it's all been pointing to Sandy Hook. It's all been pointing towards this attack on the Second Amendment. And this is all about removing the automatic weapons from the people, because this is the only way you're going to be able to defend yourself against what the government has planned for you.
Right, yeah. And the other thing, too, and this is what I've been telling some of the folks that listen to me in my show, is that it's not just about weapons, but it's also about undesirable people and how they've painted Nancy Lanza and how they've painted how she raised Adam Lanza and how this is a sort of psychological type that raises their kids in a particular fashion. So now we're seeing that parents who have independent thoughts or maybe don't want to get their kids vaccinated or maybe they don't want their kids to go to school are now put in this bucket of being not just questionable parents but dangerous parents. And that's really tricky territory. And when you look at sort of what's been happening here in this country in the result of kind of the left-right debate and how vehement the left has been about taking away guns from crazy Republicans and white bigots and all the vitriol that's coming from them, you know, what we're seeing now is this country really divided, and we're also seeing this meme of Lincoln lurking in the background of Obama and Obama being the guy that's going to have to make the tough choices, quote-unquote, just like Lincoln. You know, these are really tricky times. And you guys had guns taken away from you down there. What's it been like since then?
Well, there hasn't really been any change in the crime rate. I mean, if anything, the crime rate may have gone up, and it did in the first year. It absolutely went up in the first year. I'm not familiar on what the results were or have been since then. I mean, like, you still can get guns in Australia. I mean, you can go get a gun license, you can get a handgun license, you can't get automatic weapons or anything like that, but you can get rifles and handguns and stuff as long as you belong to a pistol club, you know, they stick a microscope up your butt for a couple of hours, you know, to get one. But you still can get guns. I mean, it hasn't been a complete ban on guns, and there are probably people that have still got quite a lot of weapons that are stashed and automatic weapons that are probably still stashed around the place. I mean, the criminals still seem to have them. But, you know, if anything, the crime rate hasn't made any difference, hasn't made anybody safer. If anything, it's made people more vulnerable. But in America, I mean, America, the guns that the people have in America are specifically for what it says in the Second Amendment, to that the people must be armed. And George Washington said that an efficient militia and well-educated militia and well-trained militia is essential for a free country. You've got to do this, you know. And this is a blatant attack. I mean, there's always the references to hunting that they're giving through it all as well. They're always calling it back to hunting. We don't see why you need any of these weapons for hunting.
Right.
It's not about hunting. It's not about hunting. If the government has weapons, certain weapons of a certain quality, then the people also need to have those weapons, because we've seen what happens to people who don't. People who give up their weapons and allow the government to have more power than they do, we've seen what happens to these countries. And with what's going on in America and the state of hardship that a lot of the people are in, and those that aren't in hardship are usually just brainwashed by television and glitz and glamour and all the bright lights and all the stuff that America has to offer. Well, I mean, America's in a very dangerous place. And you absolutely must not give up your weapons. And this is what it's all about. It's all about removing automatic weapons from the people.
Right.
You know, we can see what's going on here, this whole global situation. I mean, the war machines, they really want to kick it up a couple of gears. And they have to remove the guns from the American people to do that, because when it becomes too blatant, the people will fight back, and they have to prevent them from ever doing so. See, at the moment, it's kind of like a mutually assured destruction. The government can't really clamp down upon the people because the people have the means to clamp down on the government, you know, through the weapons. So you've got to maintain that. It's very, very delicate.
Yeah, it's one of those unspoken checks and balances that are outside of the three branches of government. So I agree with you. I don't own a weapon, but I certainly agree with you. And I'm not opposed to owning one. I've just never been drawn to have one. Let's talk a little bit about you and find out more about Max. Your videos are they're the stuff of modern legend. They're incredibly perceptive and clear and really cut to the truth on a number of different issues. When did the light bulb go on in your head and you said, you know what, there's something out there, and I got to attend to this, and I've got to start breaking things down. I've got to start sharing information with people. When did that occur for you?
Well, like, I'd always been awake. I mean, when I was four, I started questioning reality, and I started researching ancient history and stuff and reading up on the pyramids when I was about eight.
Mm-hmm.
I just when I was a kid, I just thought, oh, this is all wrong, you know. But of course, I disconnected for a while because I got to school and I thought, this is all wrong, you know. So I left school early, became a musician, and basically toured around the place playing guitar most of my life and researching, continuing the research that I had on the side. When you start looking into ancient history, you realize that everything's wrong. Everything they told you is wrong. So then you start to question why. And so you obviously get into cover-ups and conspiracy. And when you do that, you start getting into government corruption. You start realizing the world's run completely different to what it appears on the surface. And this has been an ongoing thing for me my whole life. And through traveling as a musician, I've got access to a lot of places, a lot of different libraries, and got to, you know, see a lot of different things. And it gave me a really unique perspective as well, because I was always living on the outside of society as an observer, because musicians kind of live on the outside of society. We just don't do regular things, you know?
Right.
So it gave me a really unique perspective. But then when 9/11 happened, I thought, well, hang on, this has gotten serious. This is the big event we've been waiting for. And it's happening 11 years before 2012, you know, so this is no coincidence. You know, so I started hitting chat rooms and I started, you know, I stopped playing as much and stopped touring as much and started trying to harness the power of the internet to get the message out. But I only in chat rooms and just talking to people, and I didn't know, go to news forums and all this sort of stuff. I just didn't know really how to do it.
Right.
And then in 2008, I discovered YouTube, and I thought it was just a place where, you know, high school kids uploaded their videos, you know, just ridiculous kids stuff.
Right.
But I found there was this whole truth culture on YouTube, so I started making stuff and putting it on YouTube and thought, well, I can do this. I can do a slideshow. I can put it up there. So I started putting the films up there, and then it all just kind of snowballed from there, you know. But when 9/11 happened, I felt there was a real need to start waking people up. You know, my hobby suddenly became, you know, a very, very important thing.
Yeah.
You know, my hobby of research suddenly became a very important thing. We've been waiting for this big event. It was always like something off in the future. It was just this mysterious, shadowy conspiracy. You know, you look down all the UFO rabbit holes and all the rabbit holes that can lead you down.
Right.
And you get to a point where you go, well, yeah, but is it all true? When's it all happening? You know, and then 9/11 happens and you go, oh my God, there it is. And now it is happening there. That's the confirmation. So you start talking about it, having a look at, okay, who is involved? Okay, these people are involved. Yep, this is it. This is them. It's this bloodline. They're doing it again.
Right.
And away I went from there, you know, and it's been really a great honor that people have given my shows and my films the attention that they have. It's a great honor that they do. And I don't always get it right. I mean, I don't claim to always get it right. What I'm offering is my opinion, my perspective of what I can see going on around me and steps we can hopefully take to improve it and to fix it. Because I really do think it comes down to the individual, ultimately. It comes down to people acting. They have to be prepared to act. And in order to do that, they have to know who and what they are. So that's really what I've been trying to do with the radio shows. I've been kind of banging the same drum for a long time, but sometimes you have to bang this stuff in, you know.
Right. It's an interesting juxtaposition between acting and acting, isn't it?
It is. It is, you know. I mean, the Occupy movement, a great thing about that is the Occupy movement, a great way to illustrate what you just said, you know. We don't really need, I mean, it's great to go and show solidarity with things like the Occupy movement, but we don't need to go and occupy Wall Street because we already occupy the whole planet. We occupy the whole country. The problem is that we don't occupy ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do. If we do that and we suddenly start respecting ourselves and respecting the people around them because we can see that they are as valid as us, then the whole system collapses by default. It's really simple, you know, if we could just change our heart space and just change the way we view things, you know?
Yeah, that's really, I think, very critical. One of the things that kind of set, I mean, again, I want to frame this that I do think some of what Ed did early was very important, and everything that's kind of come after that, you know, both you and I agree, has muddied the waters. But one of the things that I have had a challenge with is how he deals with criticism, or how he deals with people that are skeptical about his matches, and he almost becomes like a Mr. Hyde character and goes on attack mode, And I think that I've seen other people in the quote-unquote truth movement or alternative research who go into that mode as well. And there's a time, I think, to do that. But I think that also what happens is we get so up in our heads connecting the dots, you know, and breaking things down and making the associations. A lot of times people lose sight of their hearts. And one of the things that really comes through with your videos is that there's a lot of heart, there's a lot of humanity behind what you're doing. And I think it's essential that we don't lose sight of that while we're trying to figure out, you know, what the hell's going on here.
Oh, very much, very much. I mean, I don't wish to attack him, but I'm being put in a position where I have the opportunity to expose him, so I will. I mean,
yeah.
I can't see why else the universe would have put me there at that particular time, you know, straight after this has all happened.
Right.
And I think it's important that people see that what this has been set up to do, because I think it's the Second Amendment is important. And I think that people... And coming into their own power rather than going down rabbit holes is important. I think that the reason, I mean, the way he does it when he attacks people is, I mean, if you question him, he just basically says you're part of the family and he makes something up.
Right.
And puts it out there to muddy the waters. So then you start getting hate mail from people. If you let yourself get drawn into that, then that takes up your time, it takes up your attention. The interesting thing with me was that he posted on a video, someone had mirrored a video, and he posted on it, and so I saw it. Synchronicity just led me there. I thought, what's that? That looks like a picture that I had on one of my videos. So I clicked it, and it was a mirror of one of my videos. Now, with this big discussion going on there with Dallas Goldbug and this other guy saying how I was this family member. So I thought, okay, I'll get involved in the conversation. I kind of was having a really relaxing day, and I just sat there and had a chat with this guy and let him dig a really big hole for himself. I thought, well, there you go. You've just debunked yourself. And Ed Sheeran, so I'll post that on Facebook for you, you know. And then the trip to Dallas just got dropped in my lap. I mean, and I wasn't even thinking about it. I thought, well, that was just, I mean, I had such fun with the conversation. It wasn't like I was there stressing out and trying to prove myself to this guy. I was just having fun. I thought, if I give this guy enough room to swing the shovel, he's going to dig a really big hole. And he just did it. So, and then the trip got dropped in my lap, and I thought, well, this just kind of wants to happen, so I'll put it out there and get them backpedaling a little bit, because this is a very, very deep psyop that's been put in place, and I'm sure that there is more than one person involved. I mean, perhaps he is just there doing it by himself, but I don't think so. I mean, even the character seems to change sometimes. And besides, this is personal. He stole my wallpaper from the Crow House and used it for his YouTube channel, so
Wow.
He's got this red fractal wallpaper on his YouTube channel, which is, if you go to the Crow House, it's a blue fractal wallpaper I've got on the Crow House, which I made, and he's taken it and he's changed the hue and he's put it up there as his background on his YouTube channel. So I thought, that's interesting that they would do that as well. And he always, he had me on his subscriber list as well. See, that's why they do it as well. If they can subscribe to your channel, then people who start looking at him and start realizing, like these mainstream people, the people out in the cities, they'll start looking at it, they'll see how ridiculous all the well-aware stuff is. If they start looking into Ed Sheeran, they go, oh, look, he's into Max Egan and stuff like this.
Right.
Is where he gets all this rubbish from.
Right.
So they subscribe to the good people as well. They'll get out. That's why he always says, oh, I used to be a fan of yours, Max, you know, I don't want you to be a fan of mine, mate, because you're a co-intel operative. And that's the way they do it. You know? It's clever. But, I mean, if you were running an operation like something that we've just seen at Sandy Hook, and you're wanting to take the guns away from the American people, and you're going to use actors to do it, of course you would set up something like Well Aware One well in advance to take care of all that flack once it hits the hits the airwaves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, that's true. Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, going back to 9/11, a lot of people are still unclear in their minds, you know, who did 9/11, right? So do you want to talk about 9/11 just for a little bit?
Well, we can, but you know, who did it is it's highly speculative, you know. I mean, who didn't do it is pretty obvious. But who did it is another question. I mean, you've got people like I mean, there's so many questions. There's a lot of people say it was a Jewish conspiracy. You've got to understand that Israel knew about it before it happened, because you had the five Israelis who were arrested.
Right.
And later released, who, when they gave a press conference in Israel, they said they were there to document the event. Well, they couldn't have been there to document the event if they didn't have prior knowledge. So at least we know for a fact that Israel knew about it previously.
Right.
Happening.
Right.
But who actually did it? You've got Judy Wood saying it was done with space-based weapons. You've got a lot of evidence that suggests something very strange did happen there. All the burnt cars. I mean, there's so much stuff, but you can't completely dismiss what she said, whether you like her personality or not, or a lot of people have seen her have confrontations with her. I don't know. I haven't spoken to her. I read her book. It contained a lot of very, very compelling information.
Right.
So, who knows? I mean, who did it is a big question, man, and I couldn't really speculate. I couldn't tell you who did it. I know who didn't do it, and that was 19 Arabs with box cutters.
Right. I mean, that's absolutely ludicrous. And to have the passports of the guys show up in the rubble amidst, or nothing else, right? I mean, you've got, there's no sign of desks or telephones or anything, and yet there's the passport of one of the hijackers just conveniently resting there on top of the rubble. What was your thoughts when you first saw 9/11? What went through your head?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought, is this a plane accident? What's going on? How is a plane hit the Twin Towers? And then after looking at it, we saw another plane fly past. I went, there's another one. I went, this is an attack. And then I was thinking, I was reeling. I was thinking, is this a terrorist attack? What's going on? This is bizarre. And then when the building came down, I went, aha, this is the government. This is not a terrorist attack. That can't happen. And then when Building 7 came down in the afternoon, that totally confirmed for me that the whole thing was the government, the whole thing was a setup. And you look at the symbolism of it as well, I had that figured out by the end of the day. You've got Flight 11,
right,
crewed by a crew of 11. It's an 11-shaped building,
right,
on 9/11, 11 years before 2012. I mean, no symbolism there, is there?
Yeah, right.
I think I wouldn't even be surprised if the Twin Towers were built for this very purpose. I wouldn't be surprised if they had explosives built into the concrete, if they had, gunpowder in the concrete or something. I mean, nothing would surprise me what these people do.
Well, this was one of the theories that was put forth on the Let's Roll site, and I think that there's some merit to it. I think that it's the Hollow Towers theory, and there are pictures of the Twin Towers with the sun setting in the west and then light shining through the Twin Towers. And you look at it and you realize that about 70% of those buildings were unoccupied. And it was interesting. It's an interesting theory. And I think they were built to come down, perhaps in that fashion, but certainly they were temporary. And, they had a lot of issues. I mean, they were riddled with asbestos. And that was something that the city of New York, who owned the buildings for a brief period of time until they sold them to Larry Silverstein, were going to have to deal with. So, why not just take them down all in one shot, collect a bunch of insurance money, and maybe split it with Silverstein? I mean, that's another side angle here to all of this. One of the things that is also at risk, because when we had 9/11, a lot of people didn't talk about 9/11 in the way that you and I are talking about it now. Part of the reason why was because most people were in a state of shock and trauma. And then it would be considered, quote-unquote, bad form to question the event. I mean, I did, and I did not, I had some issues with people in my life because of that. But here we are again, Sandy Hook, and we're starting to question this event again. And here's our friend. He comes around and has his sights, and then there's the whole actors thing. And now you have the police chief or the state police chief out there basically saying, hey, look, if you talk about this or you change the story or you insert yourself, we're going to arrest you and we're going to bring charges down in your head. And so not only is the Second Amendment at risk, but the First Amendment, about even talking about these events in ways like you and I are talking about them, are in jeopardy in some ways due to some of the blowback from Well Aware One and some of the other misinformation and disinformation around this event.
Well, of course, you know, and the real clincher with Well Aware One is the fact that the media, the mainstream media, is announcing that people are calling it a hoax.
Yeah.
And that there are websites out there that say it was all actors.
Yeah.
That's the clincher. And that is almost, you know, mainstream confirmation of what Well Aware One has been set up to do.
And threatening free speech as well as the right to bear arms on both fronts.
Oh, of course. I mean, they have to do that. But, you know, it's all been leading to this point. I think I said on the show, I think that I said to someone recently that I think that this event at Sandy Hook is the most significant event you've seen in America since 9/11.
I agree.
I really do. I think this is the next level. This is taking it to the next level. And this is a direct attack upon the weapons that could be used to defend yourself against what's coming. This event is why the FEMA camps have been set up. It's why the police bought all those hollow points. It's what it's all been leading to. This is a very, very significant event. And even my trip to Texas in July, I think, hinges on this event. What is this event going to do to the United States? Because, I mean, there may indeed be a storm coming.
Yeah, well, it definitely feels that way. And again, I hearken back to all the imagery that we're seeing around Obama with Lincoln and this potential for a civil war, or taking the hard stance and removing the undesirable elements from society, or people that are in some ways akin to the South back in the Civil War. So I wanted to ask you about something maybe just a little bit different. I wanted to ask you about consciousness. And a lot of times when we talk about, again, the alternative research world or conspiracy, we neglect the whole aspect of consciousness and how the two, in some ways, work together in this whole process of awakening. And I'm wondering if you could, like, you know, give your own take on that, your own insight on that experience.
Well, to me, consciousness is everything. To me, everything is conscious. Everything is consciousness. I mean, consciousness creates reality. The perspective that I have is that I'm a single frequency of a divine consciousness that's inhabiting a biological computer that's experiencing reality from the perspective of Max E. That's what I am. You know, but ultimately, I come from the same source as you. You simply download a different frequency that you experience as Rob Phoenix, you know, because your body is tuned to that frequency. It's a different computer, you know, and it's all about the experience. It's about what we do with it. And if you look at things like the measurement problem, you know, a scientist can't measure an atom until he actually goes to measure it, because if he goes to measure an atom, he finds that the electrons that revolve around the nucleus are infinite. They exist everywhere at once, which is a complete mind mess in itself. That they can possibly exist everywhere at once, but they do. And it isn't until he goes to measure the atom that it coalesces to form the atom. So therefore, the act of observation creates the atom. And this can also be seen through the double slit experiment, you know, waves and particles.
Right.
I mean, these things react differently depending on whether you're observing them. So it's observation, conscious observation and belief of what is possible that creates reality. So therefore, all matter is conscious. I mean, if you look at an atom, is 99.99999% empty space. So that means, yeah, everything is basically empty space, which means this chair I'm sitting on is empty space. My body's empty space. Most of it's empty space. It's just there due to perception. Once you start to realize this, you begin to realize that everything comes from consciousness. Consciousness is all that really exists. Everything else is simply what we perceive it to be. So therefore, anything is possible. You know, if we can see this reality that we inhabit is a collective manifestation by a single mind that we call mankind, then you can see why reality is the way it is, and you can see how easy it would be to change it by simply changing your perspective of what is possible. You know, but we're not going to reach this, I don't believe, until we can learn to understand what we are and respect each other, respect ourselves, understand that your opinion is valid, understand that you're perfect. No one can be Rob Phoenix any better than you. So why would you see anybody as being a threat to you? Why would you see anybody as being a threat to your experience? And when you can start seeing yourself as that, you see that divine spark that is Robert Phoenix, that sentience, that consciousness, that energetic frequency that is Robert Phoenix. You look at the person next to you and you begin to see the same thing in them. It's just a different frequency from the same thing, but it's all consciousness. And once we can learn to respect each other and respect ourselves, I think the whole thing just changes. Reality could just shift, because the only thing that is not possible is that which we believe is not possible. Everything else is possible. You know, and I think I look at the world and I say, well, look what we've done. We create things. We created this. We did all of this ourselves through our conscious belief that this is how reality works. So what I've been trying to do with the radio shows is get people to understand this so they can step above this system to see that it's just a meme. It's just a man-made construct. The whole government only really exists on paper. The whole legal system only exists on paper. We just allow ourselves to be controlled by others because we're not aware of our own consciousness. We're not aware of ourselves. And we've been given all these yardsticks by society as a means of judging ourselves. So we try to measure ourselves up to all these things that are external to ourselves rather than ever finding ourselves. It's what's been done to us. It's a complete backflip of what we should be. And I think a lot of it has been done due to a loss of tribal cultures, actually, and shamanistic cultures, and what the church would call pantheism, and paganism, all this stuff that the Christians say, oh, it's the work of the devil. It's actually not. If you look at the corporate system that we've got, you find if you trace this back, this was created by the church. And then one of the main things it did was to go and wipe out all of these traditions, because all of these traditions open you up to consciousness.
Right.
And that's what they want to lock you away from. They want to lock you into this corporate system, into this left-brain reality, so you don't view the world holistically. You don't view it artistically. You forget that your life is your art. Your art is your life. You know, we've been led right away from that, Rob. So that's what it's all about. That's what I see has been done to consciousness. And that's the prison. The prison is our left brain, is our language and paper-based reality. You know, we're enslaved to the written word. We're told that this is what reality is because it says so here. So we've forgotten how to know things with our hearts the way we used to.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And when we look at the setup of duality in our culture and in our society and in our world, it keeps us in many ways in that prison. There's always the other. And there's always the black-white dynamic. There's, you know, I mean, this is kind of where we are. And when you talk about looking to the person next to you and recognizing that they're their own divine spark and their own divine frequency, that wipes out the whole duality game. And there's so much invested in splitting and dividing our attention and our intention and attention that it gets more challenging, I think, for larger numbers of people to have that collective experience that you're talking about. It's not impossible, but it's harder. And yet, here we are with these events, these Sandy Hooks, the 9/11s, the Auroras, you know, these events coming from that matrix, that duality matrix, in their own way are forcing people to kind of wake up as well. It's an interesting algorithm we've got going on here.
Well, it is. It's a very, very significant time, man. It's a very, very important moment in history, I believe. And as you say, with all of the dynamics that are happening at the moment, even with the vilification of preppers, the vilification of anyone who thinks outside of the box is happening through Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
All of this stuff, this is a huge attack on consciousness. If they can manage to get us really locked down into this fear mode, and completely locked into it, and then they win. But I can't see that they will. I can't see that it's going to happen. The more they try to box consciousness in, the more it's going to expand. And they can never really truly take everything from you. They've got to give you the semblance of freedom. You know, they give you freedom of choice and you think it's freedom. They give you freedom of what to wear and freedom of what job to work at.
Right.
And you steward as freedom, but they can never really take everything away from you, because that's when you become free.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very significant time. And I think it's important that people start looking at Sandy Hook for what it is and start looking at sites such as Well Aware One for what it is. And you know, I wouldn't really like to give the site attention. I would normally not give these types of sites any publicity at all. But because of what it's going to be used for and what it is already being used for, especially since now the mainstream media is promoting this concept and causing people to go and look at these sites, I think we need to pay attention to what's happening and get the word out to people. I think, you know, America's teetering on the brink at the moment. It really is. And
yeah.
if America falls, it will allow this corporate war machine full sway over the planet to bring about war with Iran and all the things that it wants to do. And it, again, it's important for people to understand that it's not your government really that's to blame. You know, your government is controlled by corporations. The whole thing was a setup. I mean, America is essentially a puppet government. It always has been, well, for a very long time anyway.
Yeah.
It's controlled by European corporate interests. You know, your country's been taken over by people who do not have the interests of not only the American people but the world at heart. They just don't. And this whole global situation, it's all related. And people all around the world need to pay attention to what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you think this is going to go next? Because if Sandy Hook is not the accelerator to make the push for gun control, there will be another event. And what's your take and thoughts on that?
Well, they will. They'll just keep staging them. They'll keep staging them until it happens. I know there's certain states that have said they're not going to do it. They're not going to have their firearms, their rights messed with. And the government will stage shootings in these states, of course. They'll just keep doing them. And they'll push as hard as they can. And they'll get it through probably in a few states. But, they'll just keep pushing. If they don't get it through everywhere, they'll just keep pushing until they do. That's what they do. And, you know, the people just have to be vigilant. They have to pay attention. And, you know, push back. That's all I can say. Push back, but do it in a peaceful way. Understand that this is an attack against your Constitution. This is treason. It's treason. It says in the Second Amendment that the right to bear arms should not be infringed. That's it. It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
It's not like it's open for debate or anything, you know.
And then there's the Dick Act, which apparently seals that shut as well. I mean, you know, they really cannot do it unless it's with our consent, right, theoretically, or an executive order or something from the UN, you know, piggybacking on some UN global weapon ban treaty, right?
Yeah, well, if the UN is going to ban weapons and just have the one UN global army, well, what do they need an army for if they ban all the weapons and there's no other armies? Well, who's the army going to be fighting? What, the people? Did anyone think about that? I mean, you know, why do they need an army if they've got rid of all the other armies? Why do they need one?
Right, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious what's going on here. So, and what the UN says, I mean, to me, the United Nations, it's basically an extension of the Third Reich, if you really look at it. It's not really a United Nations at all. It's a dictatorship because you have Israel and America who have the power of veto. The United States and Israel have the power of veto over all the other countries in any decision made. So you will be all united and you can all make up your mind what you want to do and then we're going to do this. Right?
Right.
That's what it is. Then after you've all made up your mind what you want to do, we're going to do what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah. That's what the United Nations is. It's not united at all. It's a united dictatorship is what it is.
Exactly.
So I don't pay any credence to anything put out by the United Nations, really. I think we need to disband in the United Nations and create some sort of Earth Council where the pyramid is turned upside down and the people are at the top and every decision made that affects this planet needs to be done with a global referendum.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit because people are they're asking for solutions. What can we do? How can we change the world? You know, what are some of your ideas, Max, where we could do things locally or collectively to make a difference?
Well, you know, both. It's got to start with the individual changing their attitude. People have to understand that we're all in this together. The only race that really exists on this planet is mankind, and there is nobody within that race or species that is any better than anybody else. There is no genealogy that has the divine right to rule this planet. There is no politician who is any better than the people he presides over or more important than the people who he presides over. People have to understand who and what they are, and they have to understand what government is. Now, we, the human race, mankind, we created society because we needed something to ensure our security against the elements and our security of food and all these sorts of things. We wanted to be able to interact with each other. Because things were a little bit chaotic, we created government to manage our society and we appointed trustees to this government to manage our infrastructure for us. That's what government is. They are a group of public trustees that we elect to act on our behalf. And I would suggest that if there's anybody in any country who is in a state of shortage or hardship or or financial woe or homelessness or difficulty in any way because of parameters that have been imposed upon them by government, then these public trustees are in breach of trust, because that is not what we employ them to do. And I'm not going into trust law, I'm not going into any of this sort of stuff. It's a basic trust agreement. Your agreement with anybody that you interact with is a trust agreement. It's an unspoken trust agreement that exists between yourself and every single person you do business with or interact with in any way. You know, if even this discussion that we're having, there's a trust agreement that we will respect each other, we'll listen to each other, we won't shout each other down. We will, you know, be kind and respectful. It's an unwritten thing. You know, if you order a pizza, there's a trust agreement between you and the police pizza delivery guy that he'll bring it there in a timely fashion. He won't overcharge you for it. It'll be hot when it gets there. It's a trust agreement. All these things are trust agreements. The government, if anybody is the nation of America or the nation of Australia, it's the people.
Right.
We are the nation. The government are simply trustees that manage our infrastructure for us. And yet the government is taking the resources of the nation, they're stealing it, they're selling it to overseas interests, they're putting everybody in the country in a state of hardship through legislation they're enacting by the power that we give them. This
right.
is breach of trust. The whole thing's breach of trust. And I think once the people realise that, then they'll stand up and say enough is enough. But again, this isn't going to happen until they change their individual heart space and respect themselves enough to want to do this and respect the people around them enough to want them to stand with them and to stand shoulder to shoulder with their neighbours, to respect their neighbours and say, hey, we can change the world if we simply realise who and what we are and hold our trustees accountable for their actions. And if they don't like it, well, we can sack them, regardless of what legislation they've created. I mean, look at what just happened in Iceland. Look at what just happened in Iceland. Basically, the government of Iceland introduced this central banking system. They trashed the entire economy, and the whole country was being sold out from under the feet of the people. And the people just said, hang on, enough is enough. You're all sacked, and if there's any debt that goes with your actions, you take it with you. We don't acknowledge any of it. You did it, not us. Go away. You're in breach of trust. We'll get a new government. They just sacked them, regardless of what the government wanted, because they're trustees. That's all they are. That's all government is trustees. So that's the way we need to look at it. I think that's a big part of it. But again, it comes down to people changing their heart space. They've got to know who they are, and they've got to be confident enough in themselves to respect themselves and to respect other people. I believe when we don't respect others, it's because we don't truly respect ourselves.
So I think, Max, really what I'm hearing you saying is that one of the things that I find challenging is people that have preconceived belief systems that really identify the other. Like, you know, for instance, people who aren't vegan, people who are vegan, or people who, you know, have a quote unquote enlightened spiritual lifestyle, you know, looking at other people who have different types of diets or different types of, you know, goals or intentions or whatever they are. I've seen this before, especially in California. They tend to look down. It was almost like, you know, once you got past Berkeley, there was a whole other world out there that they didn't really care about. And in fact, in some ways, they felt quite spiritually superior, you know, towards those people because they were not like them. That these other people were special. They had, you know, special food and special gatherings and special get-togethers. And I felt like that was really extremely limiting. No matter how enlightened they thought they were, it wasn't really open enough for other people to step into that circle with them. And I think part of what you're talking about is breaking down these belief systems that keep us separate.
Oh, look, very much. And a lot of the New Age movement is specifically designed to do that, spiritual elitism and spiritual narcissism. It gives you 90% of the truth, and then it wraps you up in a little ball of ego and narcissism, and it leaves you there. It doesn't give you any solutions, and it tells you to ignore everything outside of your belief system, basically. That's what it's designed to do. And this was all done at a specific time as well, I believe. I mean, just as people were starting to wake up to what's going on, they put all this there. So as people were beginning to be disillusioned with religion, well, they gave them another one to wrap them up in this little bubble of inaction, which is what it's done. And if you really look at some of the things that happened back in the 60s, for example, where people were really protesting, I mean, if they'd been doing what they were doing in Iraq and what they'd done in Afghanistan and all these other things, we would have had people on the streets marching and protests right around the world back in the 60s for what they're doing. But they introduced them to LSD and all this sort of stuff. They introduced drugs into the culture, and they introduced all this New Age stuff into the culture, which wrapped all these people up into a bubble of inaction. And then that got rid of all them and put them on the side. And they went off and created little hippie colonies and tried to create alternate societies away from this one. They didn't look at what was going on in this one, so now this one's coming back to eat them all up. So it's no good creating alternate societies. We need to fix the society that we've got. That's the problem. So all this has been done by design. All these movements have been created by design. And of course, you don't have to deal with the kids these days. You just got to give them technology, mobile phones and PlayStations, and that takes care of them.
Right, absolutely. And what was fascinating about the 60s movement is that once the 60s kids were done with, you know, playing with their counterculture fairy tale, putting out the counterculture fairy tale, they would join Wall Street and made millions of dollars and invested in real estate and, you know, became the system. It's fascinating.
All the heroes of the movement, dude, is there because they're all plants. They're all put in there to lead it astray. See, once you create heroes and you create demigod figures, the way they've done in the New Age movement, once you start putting people up on pedestals and you start creating a cult of personality around these people, you have the ability to distract people. They start following this leader rather than leading themselves. That's one of the reasons I never wanted to put my picture out there.
Yeah.
Because I don't like a cult of personality. It's not about me. It's about the message. I don't want followers. I want leaders. You need to be able to lead yourself. All I'm attempting to do is offer the perspective that I've had, which has helped me to be able to lead myself. I don't want you to follow me. I don't even want you to know what I look like. It doesn't matter. I'm nobody. I'm just a voice. And that's the way I always wanted it to be. But it just didn't want to stay that way, which is unfortunate. But hey, but that's what I was trying to get across to people for the first 4 years of doing the radio show, where nobody knew what I looked like. And that's why they do it, you see. And that's, of course, all these leaders. Yeah, they've all gone off. They made all the money. They distracted all the people. They probably got paid to do it half the time. So you've got to really be careful of what's going on with a lot of these sorts of movements. You've got to lead yourself.
Yeah.
That's why I always say it comes down to the individual changing your perspective and applying it to the world around you. That's ultimately what will change the world.
One of the things that really struck me about you is that you're somebody who is willing to move into action when all hell was breaking loose over at Gaza. You were ready to go. Well, it seems like you're an abrupt end to the audio there, which is unfortunate. I'm not sure what happened. Geez, I apologize for that. We're at the end of the show anyway. So let me just give you kind of an update in how the interview actually ended. Max talked about his time in Gaza, and it was actually pretty inspiring. He didn't make it, but he was willing to go there, and things had kind of cooled out a little bit. And he essentially was able to make a connection as well between Gaza as the model for kind of the rest of the planet. And I'll try to resurrect that. I had some audio difficulties that night with the connection a little bit. So, but anyway, I thought the majority of the interview, you got it. It was rock solid. And you can find Max's work over on the Crow House, which is crowhouse.com. And one of the other things that Max is thinking of doing is creating kind of a global tour where he's going to be able to set up, I think, in towns across the United States at least. And you were ready to be a witness to that or do whatever you needed to be a part of that.
Back again.
Talk a little bit about that and what moved you to do that. And I guess ultimately it sort of cooled down before you were going to go there. But that was a pretty edgy strategy at that time.
Well, it was. I mean, I got out of Gaza and I'd been home for about a month. And then when the hostilities broke out, I just wanted to go straight back. And I actually looked up. I had flights ready to book and I made contact with people in there. And they said, well, we can't get permission from the government because the government building's been blown up. And we can't, it's hopeless. You can't get in through Rafah, through the tunnels or anything because there's bombs everywhere. And it just wasn't possible. You know, I was ready to go. I absolutely wanted to go. I just wanted to go and be with my friends in Gaza. I made some really good friends while I was in there. And I really, really stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine. These are lovely people. and they're being horribly brutalized, especially in the Gaza Strip. And the world has to pay attention. One of the things that became starkly apparent to me while I was there with the stories that I heard of the West Bank, I didn't actually visit the West Bank, but the stories that I heard and the people that I know who live there as well, and what's going on in Gaza, which is in contrast, really, to what's going on in the West Bank. I mean, it's bad in both places, but it's a different type of bad. But you see the whole thing, and you put it together as Palestine, and what you begin to see is a system of surplusing and warehousing human beings. It's been very effective. And this is how it will happen all around the globe if we don't pay attention. The way of Palestine will be the way of the world, because this is how you surplus human beings, this is how you warehouse them, and this is how you discard them. This is what they're doing in Palestine. And as you see people becoming more and more dispossessed in Western countries through things such as the carbon tax here, which will go overseas, it'll go all around the world, that they'll use this model because it's working here, that people are putting up with it, even though prices are going through the roof. And more people are becoming dispossessed. It's getting, rents are almost unaffordable. So it's getting bad. And as these people are dispossessed, we'll see we've now got a workable model for warehousing and surplusing these people. We've seen it in Palestine. It's been operating for years. And this is what will be used. I mean, it's all one system. It's all just one big thing, and it's one big corporate entity, and they try these strategies out in different countries, and then what works, they take it everywhere else. And that's what we're seeing. That's what became really apparent while I was in there. So I think the world needs to pay attention to it. But the people of Gaza, they will never give up. The people of Palestine will never, ever back down. The people in West Bank eventually probably won't have much choice because there won't be much land left soon. I mean, Israel steals more and more land all the time, and there virtually won't be any West Bank left once Israel has its way. Israel says it takes this land because it's land that's strategically valuable for it. Well, what is it? It's a settlement program in a city full of just people. So what's the strategy? Of course, the strategy is to dispossess the Palestinians and turn the whole place into Israel. That's the only strategic value it has. So that's what they're doing. You know, and Gaza are just people who won't back down. You can't have our land, so they basically put a wall around the place, and they're starving them out, and they're allowing the place to become too polluted to live in. So it's kind of a slow kill. And that's what they're doing in Gaza. And the world needs to pay attention. I intend to go back there this year. I think these are wonderful people, and they deserve a lot more than what they've got. Thankfully, they've been recognised by the UN now, given recognised as a non-member state, which could be good and it could be bad. Depends on which way they go with it. It will be bad if they go with what they're pushing for now from the Palestinian Authority, and pushing for a return to the 1967 borders. That could be very bad because they need to go back to the 1948 borders.
Right.
The 1967 borders are unacceptable because Gaza and the West Bank are separated. You can't get from one to the two. You end up in a situation like East and West Pakistan. It doesn't work. So you've got to go back to the original borders, or Israel should leave altogether. If they're not willing to go back to what was originally annexed for them, then they should leave altogether, I think.
You've got a big open area in your country. Maybe Israel could just move to the center of Australia. What do you think?
Well, that'd be fine. It's about the same climate. But I think Julia Gillard wants to turn that into a nuclear waste dump. So I don't know whether that would be very fitting for Israel.
Yeah. Well, maybe they could just move to Florida then.
Well, yeah, anywhere would do. But I mean, I've got no problem with Israel being there, you know, the original 1948 borders. If they'd stuck to that, it would have been okay. And a lot of the Palestinians say, hey, look, the Israelis, the Jews have always been in this area. We've got no problem with them being in this area. And, like, there was always an area within Palestine where the Jews came from, an area that was called Israel, but it wasn't a country, it was just an area.
Right.
It's like Chinatown in New York, you know.
Right.
So it's just an area, and they got on fine. It was never a problem until the West got involved and decided to annex most of Palestine and turn it into Israel.
Right.
They dispossessed 750,000 people when they did it, which number 5 million now, who have no place to return to. 5 million Palestinian refugees just sort of wandering around with nowhere to go, and more are created all the time. Every time Israel goes in and does another settlement, then they create more refugees. And the settlement program that Israel has been conducting since 1950 will eventually bring about the implosion of Israel. It will. I mean, Israel's been so arrogant that it's actually bringing about its own demise.
Yeah.
In a way, Netanyahu is the best thing that ever happened to Palestine because he's so arrogant, he's so racist, he's obviously so much approves of genocide and ethnic cleansing and illegal occupation. He's just so arrogant that Israel is being exposed to the world as an apartheid state due to mainly to his actions. So, in a way, it's a good thing. But I don't even think that the Palestinians need to fight Israel. It will bring about its own demise simply by its own actions.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that based on what we're seeing in Gaza, where in the model that you're talking about, which is the model for the world, and I agree with you with that. Here in this country, it'll be gussied up, and it will be Agenda 21, and it'll be just a greener version of that. It'll be a more acceptable version of that. It'll appeal to people's ecological sensibilities, and therefore they'll embrace it without much conflict. Am I right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a good way to do it is to control the water, which is what coal seam gas mining is all about. So that's what they've done mainly in Gaza. No water in Gaza. You've got to have salt water showers. Wow. The only water you've got to drink is bottled water. They don't have the parts because they're in such poverty. They don't have the parts to fix things like the sewage treatment plants, which now is overflowing into the ocean, which will pollute the beaches. In another 10 to 15 to maybe 20 years, the whole place will be too polluted for you to even live. Because of the salt water showers, the salt water runoff into the soil from all the salt water shower, you know, it all accumulates, it all compounds, and it all creates an area that's uninhabitable. And eventually you won't be able to grow crops there because, the water and all the ground will be salinated. And, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult for the people to live there. And, of course, once they can't live there and they're forced to leave, then Israel can just knock down the wall and they can restore the whole place and bang, now it's part of Israel. Thank you very much. And that's the way they're doing it. Absolutely no regard for the people at all within its borders. And Gaza Strip, I mean, it's an area 5 miles wide, 25 miles long, 1.6 to 1.7 million people. Well over half the population is children. And that's what we're dealing with here. It's basically the world's largest open-air concentration camp, and most of the population is women and children. So the world needs to pay attention, because if they don't, then this is what will happen. As you see people driven out of areas in the country in the United States, this will be the way they do it. They just cut off your supplies. They just let it all pollute. They let it all go to hell, and you've got no choice. You've got to leave. You've got to go somewhere else. Then they restore the land, and suddenly it's theirs.
Right.
That's the way they're doing it, you know.
Yeah, and that's what's happening here with fracking in this country. They'll go in and they'll frack these areas, and they'll extract natural gas, and they'll pollute the water table, and they'll say, oh, sorry, you can't stay here anymore. And then right, they'll come in and restore that stuff.
Exactly. It forces people into these concentrated areas. And once they're forced into these concentrated areas, well, then we have the whole system we've got in the West Bank. We've got all the checkpoints. We've got all the camps. We've got all the refugee camps. And you have checkpoints everywhere, sometimes 6 hours to get through a checkpoint. Women giving birth on the side of the road while they're in sight of the hospital because it takes so long to get through the checkpoint. And the Israeli soldiers won't give a pregnant woman in labor precedence at a checkpoint. She's just a Palestinian, doesn't matter, you know. And so, you know, you can see with Gaza how they'll do it. This is how they'll force people out of areas. They'll just allow it to turn to muck, so you have to leave, and then you end up in a situation where it's all checkpoints and it's all regimented, and you're just a dispossessed people without any country or without any rights, the way you have in the West Bank. That's the system that they've got of this warehousing and this surplusing and this controlling of people, and the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And it's all Agenda 21, and it's happening in every country.
Right.
They're fracking all through England, they're fracking through Europe, they're fracking here in Australia. They're turning our food bowl basically into coal mines. Some of the most fertile area in this country, they're turning into coal mines. And we have very, very little fertile area in this country, and our greatest resource really is water, and they're polluting the whole thing. So it's happening everywhere, bro.
Yeah. Well, I think 2013, Max, is going to be a fairly intense year. You know, we're on the backside of whatever that event horizon was, that 12/21/12 was. And for a lot of people, you know, we're in the great unknown. This is the void. And, you know, I have some very, I have a lot of trepidation about this year in terms of collective events and what's going to take place, because I think we're in endgame now. And based on my research with numerology and astrology, I think we're going to be up against it a little bit. What's your sense?
Look, we're going to be up against it, but really we're up against ourselves, because if we come into our power, then things change.
Yeah.
I've got a mission that I'm going to start this year called the Full Circle Mission. I intend to travel to as many places as I can and take with me this basically an arts and knowledge festival that will leave a footprint everywhere we go and leave a template for every country that we go to, every community that we go to. I want to be able to feature local art, local culture, local music, and give knowledge to the people of the local areas. I want to create dialogue with politicians in local areas. I want to do this through having a tree planting initiative everywhere we go. With every festival, we'll have 2 days of tree planting at the end of it, so that we've got, you know, we can put money that we've got from the festival into the local community, buying plants and shrubs and reforesting the local areas that we go to. Leave this template for people. If we start reforesting areas that we go to within the parameters of this festival, then of course the local mayor and all these politicians want to get involved and big note themselves. So we can have a moment where we have them on stage with someone perhaps like Ken O'Keefe and myself having a round table discussion with these people in front of the crowd. We can plant the seeds of trust into people's minds and what a trust relationship is, and our need to start preserving the planet. We want to create this arts and knowledge and planting festival everywhere we go, and try to bring the world full circle back into their own power. That's what it's going to be all about. And I want to put that together this year. I've got a lot of people that are going to help me with it and get involved in it. And that's something that I'm going to be doing. So hopefully that will go around the place and leave a footprint everywhere it goes, and leave a mechanism everywhere it goes to empower local communities.
Well, that sounds tremendous, and sign me up for it when you swing by my neck of the woods. If people want to find out more about you, your projects, your videos, where can they do that?
They can go to my website, thecrowhouse.com. You can find a link to my YouTube channel there. You'll find a link to my Facebook page there. You'll find a bunch of stuff. I've got 2 Facebook pages and a backup page as well. So you'll find links to all of them on my YouTube channel, which you'll find links to that on the Crow House. Everything is on thecrowhouse.com.
Crowhouse.com. Okay, great. So when you start your world tour, let's chat again and let's give that a little momentum, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's if we get the funding to do it. I'll have to create a kickstart for it, but I've got a big meeting in March where I'm meeting with a woman that I've got to come in to do the logistics and organise it for me. I've got someone that's going to be making phone apps and all this sort of stuff and iPod apps, and we've got someone that's going to do the website. We want to live stream everything we do, a lot of stuff. We want to be able to put up a live video log every day. We want to have chat applets so people can be involved and they can accompany us on the trip. And if you want us to come to your town or your area, all you have to do is get us there. If you can arrange a venue and you can get us there, we'll bring the show there, and we'll put what we can back into the community, and we'll leave you a template that you can continue with. That's what we want to do. I think this is the year that people wake up. You know, the shift can happen, but people have to participate in it.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do, is I want to create a mechanism that everyone can participate in. I prefer to be able to do it just from home here, but I need to go and put it in place everywhere I go. It's a big job, but I think we can really make a difference with this. I think it will inspire people, and I think people will want to get involved. And I think it will create dialogue between the people and the politicians as well, and I think that's really important. These politicians have got to know that we're onto their game. We know that they're just trustees now. And we're going to awaken our community, and we're going to affect change, because we are mankind and we have the power to do this, regardless of what paper you have written down anywhere that says we can't. We understand that's all fiction. It's just we don't live in a paper-based reality. We need to restore our world. We need to take human consciousness back full circle to what it could be, and that's what we intend to do. So you can come with us, or you can get left behind. That's the way we have to approach it.
Right. Well, yeah, save a spot on that bus for me. And when you're ready, just let me know, and we'll help you out any way we can.
My pleasure. I will.
All right. Great. Max Egan, thank you for being a part of this episode of the Friday Forecast.
My pleasure, Rob. Thank you for having me on.
So if you hear my voice, you're hearing me in the post-stream version of the show. It's no longer live. And I just want to thank Max Egan again for being a part of this. So I thought it was a great interview, and sorry for the glitch there in the middle. Strange glitch. But anyway, I want to thank him for that. I want to thank Chris Van Buren for being part of the show and for you listening to this recording at this point in time. And it means a great deal. And we continue to move forward and do the work. Next week, I'll be back with the Monday mashup, navigating the astrological matrix on Wednesday, and hopefully another guest on Friday. You never know who's going to show up. Until then, use your head to discern what's real, your heart to stay open to what's possible. This is Robert Phoenix, and you've been listening to the Friday Forecast. And with that, let's bring on our friend, Philip K. Dick.
We are living in a computer-programmed reality, and the only clue we have to it is when some variable is changed and some alteration in our reality occurs. We would have the overwhelming impression that we were reliving the present, deja vu, perhaps in precisely the same way, hearing the same words, saying the same words. I submit that these impressions are valid and significant, and I will even say this: such an impression is a clue that at some past time point, a variable was changed, reprogrammed, as it were, and that because of this, an alternative world branched off.